are back with episode 785 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Gary from Jacksonville.
That's right, and we are going to be getting into the first of 2 weeks' worth of episodic discussion this time around. And, this one was, obviously a couple weeks ago, but it was also the week where we had a new show premiere. We had another show come back for its second season, and quite a few other episodes in between. But before we get into any particular detail here, Gary, why don't you give a disclaimer for our audience?
In the course of our discussions, we will reveal the secrets, explain where the family jewels are hidden, and many other spoilers, if you will, that might have occurred during the various episodes we're discussing. If you don't want them, please put our show on pause and watch the show first. But in this particular case, we've given you 2 full weeks to catch up on these shows, and so we hope you have and have some of your own thoughts as well on what we're about to discuss in them. So we are not apologizing for the spoilers, but just letting you know that whatever comes out will.
That's right. That's right. Not an apologetic spoiler policy. There you go. All right. Well, this being 2 weeks ago, there were 20 episodes that we had on our list here. And thankfully, we had quite a bit of note-taking from our friend Edmund, who still unfortunately can't make the actual recording, but is here in spirit and sometimes in word, as I can read out some of his comments as they are relevant. But as we know from past weeks, just as I go over the rules yet again, we will go over our bottom three, our top three, and then some of what we consider to be the highlights in between. But we do not, in fact, go over every single episode on this list. So you're not going to hear about us talk about 20 episodes worth of TV. Instead, we're going to kind of pick and choose the ones that are in between the top and the bottom. So that having been said, let's go ahead and talk about the shows that wound up on the bottom of the list. What I will say is that the scores ranged anywhere between a 7.25 all the way up to a 9, so all average or above. So the ones here at the bottom really just wound up at the bottom of the list. They didn't really have anything huge in terms of flaws, but probably some reasons why they were more towards that end than towards the top. So we'll go ahead and get started with this first one. Colony, Season 2, Episode 5, Company Man. Will returns to an unfamiliar workplace. At home, Katie tries to stay on her best behavior. Broussard and his cell make a startling discovery about the wall. And this one came in at an average of 7.5. And largely the reason that it did is that the first half of this season has actually been pretty intense compared to the first season. So it was a big surprise and a bit of a shocking step up as far as the season-to-season differences were concerned. Unfortunately, this was the first episode of the season that really took a step back in terms of pacing. It's a bit slower. So, yeah, it didn't quite hit the mark that some of the other episodes this season already did. So this one coming in at a 7.5. Also coming in at a 7.5 is 24 Legacy, Season 10, Episode 3, because, once again, this is the 10th season of the franchise, even if it is the only season so far of the Legacy name. Anyway... 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. Carter escapes from the precinct and tries arranging a meeting with Grimes to do the exchange. Boy, that's nice and big. Elsewhere, Rebecca and Donovan try to isolate the leak while Amira and Harris battle a small problem with their plan. All very nice and vague, and that is kind of the thing. You can pretty much describe half of the episodes of 24 just the way I described it in that recap. And it would probably make sense, because the show is really sticking to those tropes. That
now, do you feel it's copying the original show completely, or just sort of format-wise?
I think that there are certain people behind the scenes that probably say, we want you to do what the audience is familiar with. And they are. To a fault. In fact, to the point where I really feel like they're almost occasionally going to turn to the camera and wink and just be like, see, we gave you what you're expecting. Yeah, that subplot that went exactly where you knew it would. See, we're 24. Just like the old 24. But different. Cast, anyway. It's almost like 24 by numbers. I think I could have written this in my sleep. And that's what's unfortunate. I think the previous season, which was Jack Bauer's swan song, had that gravitas because everybody knew it was probably going to be the last time that character was on there. So this one trying to establish itself while also just giving you more of the same. Yeah. I don't know what the ratings are like, but for me, I'm just kind of rapidly losing interest. They need to do something to shock me, to be honest. Give me something I'm not expecting, because right now I'm seeing nothing but retread. That brings us to the show at the bottom of our list, which is unfortunately, I think, the second time in a row that it's been at the bottom of the list. And that would be Grimm, Season 6, Episode 6, Breakfast in Bed. Who could have a problem with that? We could. A mysterious Vessin turns sleepless nights into pure insanity. The investigation begins when Nick, Hank, and Wu are called to a local hotel where a grisly murder has taken place, which leads them to a guest who claims to be haunted by a frightening creature. I want there to be a spin-off that's like a comedic, like, law office called Nick, Hank, and Wu. They use that exact description for these three every single week. But anyway, Nick, Hank, and Wu. This one came in at an average of 7.25, and Gary, you thought it was a dead average episode.
Yeah, I would, as we've talked about in the previous episode, this episode per se, not ours. Why they feel the need to do these somewhat bottled shows is has me sort of scratching my head. Are they pulling this? Unlike the last show, does feel like it belongs in this season. Everything sort of feels right about it, but at the same time, you know they're running to the end. Oh gosh, I want it. I want to close up so many different things, and this still is taunting me again. The creature, I thought they put a little effort into it, and I sort of enjoyed the whole concept of it. In some ways, it was much similar to the cicada guy who had his own place and would just come out every so often. And you know, it was similar in that respect. But I enjoyed the twist on it, and I have to say, you know, we're not ending up with a werewolf every week the way that I had always feared of this series. So they're still coming up with rather imaginative creatures, and I can't say it was bad, but it just wasn't good. I didn't feel that anyone really stretched or grew, or there were any real developments from the beginning of this episode to the end of the episode.
Yeah, this is the second week in a row where it felt like they were treading water with the bigger storylines, and they just wanted to have a chance to just do some Vessin stuff that maybe they haven't done in the past. They tried to be clever. This one was the one where they actually had this, if I remember correctly, and I think this is the one, they had this old guy in a wheelchair sitting in the hallway.
Yes.
And the entire episode, you figured, this guy's got to have something to do with it. And then at the end, he turns into a Vessin, and it's basically a red fish-like Vessin.
Yes.
They don't tell you what it is. It has nothing to do with anything. And you.
But I think I've captured it on Pokemon.
Maybe you have. But then you throw to yourself and go, oh, he was a red herring. And literally.
Oh, geez, I didn't see that at the time. You're absolutely right.
A big chunk of the episode was simply to have the visual gag at the end of the guy being a literal red herring.
I didn't see that before. But
it makes it so much worse now, doesn't it?
Yes, it really does.
It really does.
That is.
Yeah, what do you think? Do you want to revise your score?
Drop it half a point. It's not going to help it. Yeah. Oh, Jesus.
Yes. So that just gives you an idea of like how little there was substance-wise to this one. It just was there. There wasn't a whole lot of big shocking stuff happening here. It was just, yeah, we've got this Vessin of the week. It's transitional. There are some things going on. That end, I don't know. There was that whole part towards the end when they were revealing certain things between Juliet and Juliet. Is that her name? No, they still haven't given us a new name
Eve.
For her, so I'll just go Julie Eve or whatever, and Rosalie, where, you know, something that they found that was related to astronomical stuff. And I'm watching as Rosalie is explaining this software, and maybe I'm too much of an astronomy geek, but I'm just sitting there picking out all the mistakes. Like, look, the planetary positions in all the planets are in circular orbits.
Yes.
I'm like, oh, no. And, you know, they're sitting there going, we can't, you know the exact positions of stars 10,000 years ago. And I'm going, oh.
Yes, writers, we can.
Writers, you can do better than this. Because anybody who knows anything on the subject is groaning right now. And, yeah, that hurt, too. So that's why I think it definitely belongs here at the bottom. They kind of phoned this one in and then had some stuff that really just did not add up. And they could have done a better job with the science that they were trying to throw in there. Like, look, if you guys are going to stick to legends and stuff like that, maybe you should stick to legends. Don't try to bring science into it.
Yeah.
Not working. All right, what that means is that we can move up onto our top three, though, and I think that we're a little...
Yay!
All right, the number three show for the week was The Magicians, Season 2, Episode 3, divine elimination. Quentin and his friends prepare to face the beast again, while Julia conspires with the beast and their new ally to lure and trap Renard. This one came in at a 9, and a big reason why is that there was a prominent death of a main character that I did not see coming at all. It even felt like a fake-out, because they kind of killed off the character, then that character came back, but it was only for a momentary reprieve. And yeah, I was just left stunned staring at the end credits as they're spooling out, and they even did the thing where instead of having the credits music, they just had silence. And that was one of those moments where I went, oh wait, they're serious. Wow, they really killed that character. Oh wow. And I did say in my notes, you know, I hope that they don't cop out and reverse it, and I'll just kind of throw it out there. They didn't reverse it. So the death is sticking, and yeah, that was a big surprise to me. I did not see it coming, and that was a really nice bit of writing. I don't know if people who are familiar with the source material saw it coming, but yeah, I was stunned. All three shows, you know, actually, the top three here, were in the same night. That's pretty impressive. Anyway, go ahead, Gary.
I haven't been able to work the Magicians in, but I've heard this season is a marked improvement over the previous season. Do you think it is, or is it just sort of the same and it has been good?
No, I think that it is building on things. And in fact, if I go and I look here and I find it, right now, at least score-wise, it's pretty much on par. But I would say that there is a certain amount of confidence. I think that they are more confident in the premise of the show. And every so often, I think that they get a little bit too comfortable with that. And they do let the humor kind of overshadow some of the more dramatic things, but the humor is pretty broad, it's pretty broad and mature, so that can even be a pretty fun aspect of the show that people are not expecting. But yeah, this season I would say is a step up, but I can't say that's that far away from what they did in the first season. I think it just took a few episodes at the beginning for people to kind of get their heads around the adaptation. That probably has a lot to do with it. All right, that brings us to the number two show for the week, and that would be The Expanse, Season 2, Episode 3, Static. Catch up with me, computer. Holden and Miller butt heads about how the raid was handled. Hey, it's the AMC Press Department is working for Sci-Fi now.
Well, at least they got the names right there.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. This one came in at a 9, and both Edmund and I gave it a 9. Edmund is the one who is familiar with the books that the Expanse is based upon, so I'll take that take that from his perspective. He is giving it the same score that I am, and I am not familiar with the books. But anyway, Edmund says here, complications and conflicts ensue, but the show is doing a great job keeping track of the various threads, and the sense of dread and approaching doom is ramping up very nicely. Absolutely, that's one of the things I've definitely noticed. And I love the fact that they are delving into this alien proto-molecule more. There are scenes involving it in this episode that are just super creepy and unnerving. And everybody is starting to get to the point where they're just going to unload on each other. The entire solar system is pretty much on the brink of utter war. And in the middle of all this is this complete unknown that people are freaking out about, that just ramping up the tension more. And yeah, this is just the third episode of the second season. So something to keep in mind, I guess. My understanding as it stands right now, which I did not know before, is that actually the first season was not the full adaptation of the first book. It was approximately 2/3 of the first book. Apparently, the adaptation of the first book goes into the middle of season 2. So this intensity here at the beginning of season 2 is largely because it's the third act of the book playing out. So you are getting the payoffs of that first, you know, major story right here at the beginning of the second season. So yeah, I definitely feel that that makes a lot of sense of what we're seeing, because otherwise I didn't know how this was going to be able to keep going as it was, because it was like, wow, you're really starting off on a high note here.
Yeah, I just caught the first episode of the new season this week, and I'm trying to catch up, and I couldn't burn through it quick enough, but it looks really good, so I'm glad to see you rated it so high. So.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I've been really happy with it since its return, and it's definitely a show that I missed, and I'm being reminded week after week of exactly why that is the case. So, yeah, it's definitely something that I recommend. Go back and watch from the beginning. You will not be disappointed if you are a hard sci-fi fan. That brings us to our number one show for the week, and a lot of people are going to be completely not surprised by this. because there was ranting, but raving on Facebook pretty much from the moment that this started spooling out. Legion, Season 1, Episode 1, Chapter 1. Hey, at least it's not pilot. In the series premiere, a troubled young man battling mental illness wonders if the visions he is experiencing are real following a strange encounter with a fellow patient. Yeah. Wow. So this one came in at an average of 9, but since it had the largest number of votes, it was the number one show for the week. And Gary, before I get into Maya and Edmund's comments on this, you did give it the lowest score, but even so, it was a pretty high score. So yeah, your thoughts on Legion?
You know, I'm familiar with the source material, of course, and gosh, I wish the rights existed that they could have actually used X-Men in it, because I thought there were several points that would have easily fit in and drawn in more audiences as a result. Those issues aside, I thought the visual displays of his power were incredibly well done. I realize they're computer effects, but gosh, you could have fooled me. They looked really good. They put a lot of effort and money into it to make this show have the look that it does. The scenery of the various hospital scenes and outdoor scenes are either meticulously accurate or just plain out gorgeous. And so, yes, set scenery design's great. The actors, you know, he's supposed to be playing a reserved guy who feels that he's got severe mental problems. So I don't feel you always get the range that you would like to out of, say, another actor or story. But I think, yeah, I have to take that a little bit with who the character is supposed to be and that he's coming out of his shell. So we'll have to see. I hope he doesn't turn arrogant, which I almost feel like a sense that he is, because he seems so frustrated at everything, and I'm hoping that's not the core of his character. That being said, they introduced a lot of people and never really gave us much explanation about anybody. It's sort of, we're really looking at this almost from his point of view to a large extent, and we're not getting, at least for me, not much background as to what's going on in this pilot episode. So I realize it's a pilot and they can't, if they do the job right, they really should not spool out everything the first episode. But it felt like they were, and then stopped short of giving us explanations. So it wasn't like we got to see two people in the first episode, and then we'll meet the third and fourth later. We met all three or four of them, but they didn't tell us anything about them. So, you know, much as we often complain where pilots are dump vehicles to lay out the world for us and they jam it down our throats, this one sort of felt like they did wave it in front of us teasingly and did not give us any context to sort of throw that into it. So that did hold back my points a little bit. I'm not still saying it wasn't good. I think it's got a great deal of potential, and I am caught up in the show currently and looking forward to more. So I'm glad. I don't want to reveal anything at this point. I think they have a good start. But as I said, the sort of world waving in front of me, just it did leave me a little, I don't know about wanting more, but just sort of frustrated that I have no way to judge the people or some of the situations at this moment.
Yeah, I think that was pretty intentional, actually. And it's a gamble, right? Because yeah, we have complained about other shows that do that sort of thing, and they're not intending to do it, but they kind of stumble there, and then they wind up suffering as a result. But here, I feel like it actually might be a positive, because this show, at least this episode, is meant to be seen from his point of view, and his point of view is so messed up.
Agreed. Yeah,
because as reserved as he is as a character, the world around him, we're seeing and perceiving essentially the way that he does, and the entire first episode is just a complete mind trip. The visuals are all over the place in some really amazing ways. The way that people are introduced is haphazard and kind of in pieces, just like you are meant to understand that that is how he sees the world. There's this constant presence of this really strange-looking being with yellow eyes that pops in and out of his perception constantly. And what I love about that is that throughout the music is playing, and there is a constant musical score going on in the background. And sometimes you don't even realize it, but there is stuff going on everywhere. Visually, there's stuff in the background. Musically, in the score, there's stuff happening. And it's discordant at certain times, and at other times it's pleasant when he's thinking about the girl that he's interested in, who turns out to not be anything like what he was expecting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are some pretty big moments in that first episode that were shocking. Like, you know, there was the character that died. But that doesn't mean a whole lot in this show, which is kind of amazing. And you're right. They do connect it to the X-Men world, but only in the most bare bones way. And there is that really amazing tracking shot that they do at the end, which completely changes your perception of the world that he's in. And connects it a little bit to the larger universe, and it does kind of beg the question, how does that fit into what we know of as the X-Men universe? And I think that you're right, they could have done some connections there, but I'm kind of glad that they haven't yet. If they plan to do it later, fine, but I liked this whole idea that, and I almost felt like it was unfortunate that it connected to the X-Men later, because I thought to myself, can you imagine if they just let the first episode be him at the insane asylum? This could have been a compelling story just in that. That here's a kid with psychic powers, that his power is so potent and overwhelming that he literally thinks he's insane and he's not.
Well, I think they're still carrying that out to a large extent. Yeah. I wouldn't say it's minimized because of some of those connections.
I think that just that alone would have been enough of a show. Yeah, definitely.
But it's all about synergy, John. You know, everybody wants to, you know.
Yeah, maybe.
But at the same time, they said they didn't want to do that with this. So, I mean, I guess they just love the source material, but they have said they have no plans to even, you know, make the kind of references, I'm assuming, much like some of the Netflix do, where they'll refer to the Battle of New York occasionally. But, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, but that's all you get. So I don't even think they're trying to do anything like that.
I don't think they're even doing it either. I mean, they have yet to even suggest that maybe, you know, his parentage from the comics might not even come into it, for instance, which would be really interesting if they chose not to go that way. But, you know, they are begging the question, why would you even bring up the X-Men universe at all, which they do right in the, in the title. You know, they've got the X symbol right there.
Yeah, I know.
So
I don't.
Why? I do feel like there's something there that they're kind of keeping very close to themselves until they're ready to pull it off. But in the meantime, I'm happy with what I see. Edmund gave this one a 9, saying, Noah Hawley taking on comics is just as glorious as I had hoped. The visual style, the music cues, as a Who fan, loved Happy Jack illustrating David's youthful transgressions. Reflecting David's mental state and confusion are all great stuff. Nice to see complexity and maturity brought to bear on this genre. Could be the first comic series that truly feels like a graphic novel. I think that's true. That visual style was one of the things that I loved. And this was easily one of my favorite pilots in a long time. This wasn't even anywhere close to the 6 that I usually default to.
Yeah, no, it was a very strong pilot, I agree. Yeah.
But you know what? I am just going to emphasize again. I felt like it was so strong presenting this mental landscape that David had for so much of the episode that those last few minutes that grounded it in quote-unquote reality, I felt like it almost took a little bit away from it. And not a lot, just a little, because otherwise I think I would have gotten it at the 10, because it would have been like, wow, you got me to watch a show about an insane person or someone who thinks they're insane and they're not. But by hooking me with a comic book thing that is practically non-existent, but because they had to do that little bit at the end, I'm curious where they're going to go with it. Show me that is as compelling as everything else that I saw, and I'll be happy. But wow, what a start. What a start. This is not what I thought the show was going to be.
This almost seemed to me like it was almost like a mini series in the can that they had done. You know, that like it's polished. It's well past any sort of pilot issues for a large extent.
Oh, yeah, I would say that this definitely felt like they had long past resolved any of that or blown right past that problem and went right in there, guns blazing, so to speak. But, yeah, and this is, like I said, I just from the descriptions, this isn't what I thought we were getting.
No,
I'm stunned. This is really much better than what I thought it was on paper.
Yeah, it's a severe left turn. I thought we were going to get Peter Parker insecurities, and instead we get full nut jobs.
Yeah.
And so that's nice. And, you know, I realize our fans, you know, as we're talking about it, this is a kind of really an obscure character in the X-Men lore. Who he basically is he's supposed to be Professor Xavier's son, who he didn't know he had. And as the son starts to exhibit all these different psychic powers, he's assumed to be sort of nuts and is committed for many years until he's discovered. And at that point, he's severely messed up in the comic books and has multiple personality disorder as a result of it.
Yep, absolutely.
And so it does have me scratching my head to wonder, are all these characters real?
Yeah.
Don't know yet. I mean, they haven't presented that they aren't, but at the same time, I'm like, in the comics, they always portray them as people in his, that he's seeing and interacting with. So I'm curious. But we'll have to wait and see on that.
Yep. To be determined, as the case may be. All right. Well, that means that we can delve into a few of these other shows that were more in the middle of the pack. And I am curious what show you would pick as your first one to delve into.
Oh, I'm already feeling the losses, but we'll go ahead and talk about Timeless. I just love that show.
Yeah, this time it didn't quite make it into the top three, but maybe a couple different reasons why. But go ahead. Give me your thoughts on this one.
Oh, I thought it was kind of it was nice. I liked it. The Al Capone character didn't really do it for me. I'm not sure if I really wanted an over-the-top guy, and this guy wasn't. The Untouchables De Niro still echoes in my head every time I hear Al Capone's name anymore. But that being said, I still think they did a very nice job. The killing of Ness shocked the hell out of me. This turn to his brother, I was aware of the person existing in real life, so that was a pleasant surprise, although, again, unexpected. I figured one of them were just going to sort of step in and become a G-Man. And I generally liked it. And then as a back note, we still have the Rittenhouse activity going on at the center headquarters.
Yeah, I know.
Is there a name for that place?
I can't remember.
Yeah. Yeah, they haven't given it a snazzy three-letter
code word.
Yeah. But anyway, so we still have Rittenhouse in charge there, and we're working, we're sort of working around them right now, so that's interesting. And I don't want to say this was a filler episode, because there, as I said, I felt there was a little bit of growth in running of some of the characters, and they still do a great job every time they jump history, so I can't complain too much. It didn't advance enough of the arc as I would hope in the penultimate episode, I believe. So
I believe this is the let me just check real quick. I think that's correct. Yes, it is the penultimate episode.
Yeah, so I wish we had delved a little further into a Rittenhouse, if not a resolution, or at least somewhere along the lines. But overall, still a good episode. The team's back together again, and I'm at the end, at least, and so I'm happy. The substitute teammate who died is seemed like a nice guy, but we don't have the budget for that, so no more standard characters. So bye.
That might be it exactly. But yeah, as this show is coming to its close,
season ending. I will let you use.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Fair enough. It is getting much stronger, and I would feel bad if it did turn out that it just was too slow a burn. That is kind of the fear that's out there, as we've mentioned many times already. So, all right. That having been said,
what's your choice, John?
What's my choice here on this list? I would actually like to talk a little bit about The Walking Dead.
Okay.
It didn't make our top three. It was just outside of the top three, actually. But this would be The Walking Dead, Season 7, Episode 9, Rock in the Road. Rick and the group are led to a new community where they are introduced to its inhabitants and ruler, and a familiar face resurfaces. This is the mid-season return for The Walking Dead. And, as Edmund says here, nice to see the much-heralded coming together of the communities get started. A welcome change from the beatdown the main characters and audience went through in the first half of the season. Yes, that's where I felt this was kind of good steps in the right direction. There was a really fun action set piece right in the middle where they had that wire between the two cars and just mowed down.
Oh boy, that was fun. Yeah.
That was really fun, even if it was completely ridiculous.
Yeah.
Rick's reaction to meeting Shiva was pretty good. But yeah, and I do have to say, Rick, the Rock in the Road story was one of the worst I'm making up a story as I go along moments I've ever seen, but good on you, Rick, for trying. Just your thoughts, because Gary, this was one of your favorite episodes of the week, it seems.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed it a lot, and I have a sense that the blowback or anger or frustration over the level of human-on-human violence from last season was very much present in this episode, meaning that they were aware of it and they worked very hard to cut it out. As I think about the episode, I'm trying to think. I never actually saw anyone shot. I never, at most there was some physical violence, but nothing of any large consequence. There was no chopping, axing, killing, or anything of that. And I wondered, I mean, I know they got a lot of complaints and issues, because while there wouldn't be a voice raised if Negan had done that to any zombie whatsoever, the fact that he did it to humans all of a sudden led to a complaint about violence.
Yes.
And, you know, of course, you know, I really, you know, it was really, I don't know if an eye-opener is the right way, but it, you know, it really puts into, makes you question your acceptance of levels of violence. And when violence is against something or someone else, it's perfectly acceptable. And then as soon as it's about us, it automatically becomes wrong. And well, I mean, I'm not saying that they shouldn't be killing zombies, but I got the sense that we've all sort of become deadened, much like they have, to some of the violence that's in this world. And not until it's actually affecting people that we care about, does it start to matter. And I almost want to pull this through society levels and, you know, and really go into a lot of sociological examination about it, but it's only, ours is not an hour long show, and this only is an hour long show for Walking Dead. So I don't think we have that kind of time or insight, except just to question, you know, why now that it's with people we care about, is it now so wrong? And why wasn't it wrong before? Why didn't we complain when Rick went through and killed all the saviors at that little radio station as much? But now that you know, he killed Abraham and Glenn, where everyone's up in arms and doesn't want to see the show anymore, and it's too violent a show. They've been doing these same things to people for some time now, guys. Why now? What has pushed it over the edge to pedal it back? You know, I honestly felt the wire thing, while I did enjoy the scene, was extremely hokey and was put in place of any other type of violence, because they did not want to have Rick hacking through that whole crowd of people.
That may be it. I mean, and I wonder if it's just they're now getting to the point where they're trying to be over the top, because that's all that they've got left when it comes to some of the stuff for the zombies. But maybe that's putting a little bit too fine or too fine a point on it. I don't know. But yeah, we talked about the whole violence thing before, and it is a bit hypocritical to a certain degree, because, quite frankly, where was this hue and cry when Herschel got hacked and his head got cut off by the governor?
Yeah.
That was pretty violent. Now, we didn't see everything necessarily, but is it because Negan took such pleasure in it? Or seemed to take such pleasure in it? I don't know. It's hard to say. Hard to say. But this is a nice turn. I think that it's now that it feels like, oh, you know, the big bad is being taken on. We're finally doing something about this. Now it feels like maybe this is the, oh yeah, now they're being more proactive. Now they're not just, you know, back on their heels. And I do feel like the numbers are actually improving. So we'll see whether or not this is just, they want to see people inflict violence on zombies, not on each other. That still doesn't sound like The Walking Dead to me, but okay. Next on the list, did you have anything else here that you wanted to jump into?
Let's see. Yeah, let's talk about, I guess we did have the most votes on it. Although I rated it high, it's not that memorable to me, but let's talk about Supergirl.
Okay, well, we can be brief about it if you want to. Yeah. This would be Supergirl, Season 2, Episode 12, Luthor's. Lena is arrested for helping break Metallo and Lillian Luthor out of prison. While the evidence seems stacked against her, Kara refuses to believe her friend is guilty and fights to clear Lena's name. Came in at an average of 8.33. Henry gave us a relatively rare score here, and his comments here. With Supergirl, there's the general feeling that no villain has truly stuck. At least not one who can be both Supergirl's physical and mental equal. They should go back to the Luthor's well very soon, though, because that's where the show can develop substance. And I think that that's maybe, you know, a pretty good, that's a pretty good point to be made. And I even said myself, it's a solid episode, but at the end I really felt like, wow, Kara, you know, they're trying to make you look really trusting and idealistic, but sometimes it just makes you look stupidly naive. And there's a fine line there, between being idealistic and just foolhardy. And I felt like, okay, just because you were kind of justified this time, maybe, doesn't mean that it's going to work out very well in the future. And I don't know if that is just Supergirl putting its heart on its sleeve way too much, like it seems like they've been doing this season or what, but I don't know, Gary, what are your thoughts?
Well, I agree they're looking for a direction, and I don't know that they found it yet. Maybe this whole Lena Luthor might be, Henry says, might be the way to go. It's hard to find a physical threat for her, so maybe we need to find an emotional one.
That sounds like it might work out better that way.
Yeah, because she seems almost unbeatable and on a physical issue, and even if she is sort of met her match, she seems to have a cadre of assistants to definitely tilt the balance back her way. So physical might not be the way to go. And I mean, I never pictured Supergirl being a punch-em-up kind of show anyway. It's been much more about relationships and her issues of fitting in and succeeding in the world. So I think that would do well. And with the loss of Cat Grant, with the network changes, I felt that we've lost some of that. Snapper Carr, while he might be entertaining, is not someone that really, at least in my opinion, lifts up Kara the way that she needs to be. Challenges perhaps, but doesn't lift up. And I think she benefits from that. So I don't know if we're talking surrogate mother here, or maybe an extra sister who understands, sort of being more powerful in a sense, where Lena might be more of a peer than her sister is.
Mm, that might be true. I think you're right. I think that what they need to do, and as Henry was saying, they need to kind of pin something down this season, because it really feels like there's a lot happening, but I don't feel like it's cohesive, particularly in terms of adversarial type of things. So we shall see if they can get their mojo back on that one. But a lot of shows here that wound up in the middle of the pack as we round out this episode. Just going to mention some of these. Riverdale was coming back strong yet again with an 8.5.
I really feel like a guilty pleasure with that, John. It's starting to make me feel like soap opera, or more so than Twin Peaks. And am I reading it wrong?
I don't know, because it's still early in the show, right?
Okay.
It could go either way. That said, you did seem to enjoy it a lot. So
I did.
Maybe a guilty pleasure, but it's still a pleasure.
Yes. So,
Black Sails came in strong with another 8.5. We didn't mention Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but just want to say that it's Season 4, Episode 14 came in at an 8.5. Arrow, Season 5, Episode 12, Bratva, came in at an 8.25. Man in the High Castle, Season 2, Episode 9, Detonation, came in at an 8.25. And then we have a nice little run of 8s here. We have The 100, Season 4, Episode 2, Heavy Lies the Crown, at an 8. Supernatural, Season 12, Episode 11, Regarding Dean, came in at an 8. Nice comedic episode there. The Vampire Diaries, Season 8, Episode 12, What Are You?, came in at an 8. Sleepy Hollow, Season 4, Episode 6, Homecoming, came in at an 8, and maybe notable for the fact that it may have been middle of the pack, but it wasn't at the bottom of the list this week.
Huh.
So a good, solid episode there. An episode where they went back to Sleepy Hollow, so that might have helped. Humans came back, Season 2, Episode 1, with a solid 8. And Homeland, Season 6, Episode 4, A Flash of Light, came in at an average of 7.5. So tied with a couple of our episodes in the bottom three. So just outside of the bottom three, just mainly because of how things were sorted. It is the only reason it stayed out of the bottom three. Edmund said about Homeland, just for those interested, starting to regress into 24 territory again, which I guess ties back to my comments about 24 Legacy. No interest in exploring FBI entrapment. Let's just make the kid the patsy for a bombing in New York City. Oh, spoiler. Oh, good place to end our episode with those comments from Edmund. So when we come back next time, we're going to get into the second week's worth of episodic discussion. So until then.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth. on Twitter at Critical Myth or Google Plus under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the Critical Myth.